This is Katie and Kay Carbondale. Support for Katie and Kay in kind comes from your membership and from Louis the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, networking support, tutoring, and web design. Be secure, informed, and connected. 948-7992. And from Umbrella Roofing, providing roofing contractors services, gutter installation, and architectural sheet metal fabrication for the Roaring Fork and Eagle Valleys. Umbrella Roofing can be reached at umbrella-roofing.com and 704-9130. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer from Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
How's it going, Matt?
Going great.
Good.
Nice and snowy out there.
Yes, it's the real deal out there. So, it would have been a good day to stay in.
It would have.
Yeah.
And it's President's Day.
Yeah. Would have been a great excuse.
Yeah.
I should have done a phoner, as they say.
Uh-huh.
Leave you in here all by yourself. But actually, you live in Glenwood, too, so it's, you know.
Yeah.
It's equally intrusive for you to drive in for the show.
Yeah. Someday we'll have to do a full remote show, figure out how to answer the phone remotely.
I think we'd have to do it from, like, a couple of really, really exotic locations, you know. You know, just basically, you know, you can call from like the Isle of Tonga or something, and I can call from the Arctic Circle, you know.
Yeah.
And so that way you got like wind whistling in the background and
birds chirping.
Yeah.
Ice cracking.
Yes. Exactly. So.
So you've been on a little kick lately, it sounded like.
Yeah. I'm feeling it's feeling a little bit like a guilty pleasure here, you know, but it actually started, my dad got me a DNA test for Ancestry.com, and not that I'm here to promote their products necessarily, because I have to say it's taken a ridiculously long time for the results to come back. I sent it in, I think, on the 6th of January, and still have not received the results. I've received a couple emails from them letting me know that we're really sorry it's taking so long. So I guess business is good for those guys. I guess they sold a lot of DNA tests.
For Christmas,
exactly. Yep. So, so one of the things I learned straight out of the shoot is that, I don't know if you knew this or not, but this is pretty geeky stuff. That is that if you have a sibling, even if they're not your identical sibling, the results of their DNA test is going to be slightly different than yours. Did you know that?
Yes.
Okay, because I guess there are certain genetic characteristics that get passed on, and some get passed on and some don't, or some genes get passed on.
Right, because there's each side of the egg and the sperm have a different set of genes that are going to be put together. So that's why we get, you know, boys and girls and and slight variations.
Got it.
Of the sexes in there. So
yeah. So originally I was like, well, I didn't know that. I was thinking, I will just send it in and the results will be, you know, for me and my brother, you know, because it was a gift from my dad to me and my brother, basically. And so I was just like, well, I mean, okay, who wants to spit in the vial, you know, and send it in? And then I started finding out that that those tests will be different. So I went ahead and ordered one for my brother as well. So we're just waiting for that sucker to come in the mail. So anyway, if you want to call and you want to talk about DNA testing or genealogy or genealogy websites, because that's what we're getting ready to talk about, give us a call at 970-963-2976. Or if you have any other technical issue that you're, you know, having problems with, I mean, even, you know, like
printers,
cable jiggling of HDMI cables, if you're Olympic coverage went out in the middle of the show last night, you know, and you want to find out how the ice dancing came out. I can't tell you, actually.
Nope.
I glazed over pretty quickly into the ice dancing. It's just not a very guy-like thing. So anyway.
So you're more interested in the curling? The moving
I
the
have
rocks?
Not been lucky enough to catch any curling. Oh. You know, I mean, I've had like a six-pack of non-alcoholic Wisconsin beer and some, you know, sausages ready just in case it comes on. And I've been completely denied. So I guess I need to, like, tune into, like, one of the back channel on the dark web, you know, like the curling channel or something, you know. It's but anyway, going back to the DNA test, so that's how I kind of got into Ancestry, the Ancestry.com thing. And I had done Ancestry.com years ago, and I was able to get a few generations in, but I do have to say that their system has really improved, and it's probably largely because there's so much data. You know, so many people have shared or public family trees on there now.
Yeah, well, probably do they use public records and things like that have been digitized?
Yes. Yeah. You basically. Say you start out a new tree and you put somebody's name in and you put in their birth date. And really, a lot of times, all you have to do is put in a birth date or a birth year. And when you go back to your family tree, a little leaf will appear in the upper right hand corner. And you click on that leaf and it basically says, X number of hints. And you click on that label and then it brings you to a page. And basically there are all kinds of public records. There are pictures in certain instances, or even portraits or paintings, pictures of grave markers, things like that. And so there's all different kinds of things, and you can attach all different kinds of data to a particular person's record. And then you can also click on the one that says usually the top result seems to be where most of the pay dirt is, and it's basically a collection of other family trees that have that same person in them. And so you can basically poach the other people's research, and it'll have listings of parental names. Now, one beef that I do have with Ancestry.com is that if you start getting into records that are outside of the United States, then they pop up with their handout and go, "Oh, it looks like your search is taking on an international aspect." And it then basically says, and I didn't even look, because I know they want money. And I'm just like, "No, I'm not going to pay you any more money. I'm already paying you $20 a month. That's enough. That pans out to be quite a bit of money, And, so that kind of took me towards the direction of, I started, doing some Google research, and, I found a lot of records that I couldn't find on Ancestry on a website called MyHeritage.com. And it turns out MyHeritage.com runs about the same price. I think it's $119 a year, or maybe it's $119 for every 6 months. But anyway, not a whole lot different in the pricing, but you can go, basically you get records from all over the world, and there's no barriers put up, to charge you extra money or whatever. And so I signed up for a free trial on MyHeritage.com, got a whole bunch of information and plugged it into my Ancestry.com side. But I think, when it comes time to renew, I'll probably be inclined to switch over, because they actually have a tool that allows you can export family trees into a GEDCOM file. Do you know what a GEDCOM? Have you heard of a GEDCOM?
No.
File? It's GEDCOM. It's basically it's some sort of a format file that allows you to move it from different genealogy applications to another. So it looks like we got a call.
You're on with the Geeks.
Yes, is this Geek Speak?
It is. This is Geek Central.
All right. Well, I have a home backup question for you.
Okay.
Somewhat convoluted. It started with the fact that I've been using CrashPlan for a couple of years now, and I really like it, but CrashPlan for Home is now being moved. They're phasing it out as of October.
Okay.
And I've been looking at replacements for it, including CrashPlan for Business. And I have, probably about 200 gigs worth of common files, like movies and documents and that kind of thing, plus some software that I back up just locally in case I lose the media. And I thought, well, this would be a perfect opportunity to move from external drives hanging off my desktop to a NAS. And targeted Synology's NAS, a model DS218J. It's their entry-level thing.
Okay.
And I started looking at the software involved with all that. And first, I should tell you, I'm a retired software professional. Application software is what I did, and I'm used to software complexity, but this stuff is just mind-bending. There was at least three or four different solutions for how you could do replication and whether it was versioning or not versioning, and not all the software plays well together. I thought the ideal solution would be to continue using CrashPlan, but it, like a lot of the other backup software, like Carbonite and whatnot, will not back up a NAS for business reasons.
Sure.
And so I wasn't quite sure what the solution was going to be. I'm still looking for the convenience of having a local backup to do a quick recovery from, but still pushing it up to the cloud so that I have it there in case something catastrophic happens locally, hardware loss or ransomware. And CrashPlan you can run on the Synology NAS, but it's not supported. And apparently if they upgrade the OS on the NAS, then it could break. And it's just... And finally, I was reading that Synology is actually coming out with a product called C2, which looks to be very close to a CrashPlan equivalent in that you can back up files directly to the cloud without going through the NAS or going through the NAS. So if the NAS is there or not, you can still recover. But unfortunately, it's only available in Europe at present. So I finally decided probably the smartest thing for me is to continue using an external drive for the shared local files, but to then use the NAS as a target for backups. And then inside the NAS, I can have it do a backup of the backup. So if ransomware actually hits my network and then scrambles the backups, at least inside the NAS, I can restore those. I tell you, I had a couple of sleepless nights trying to figure this out. So I'm wondering if that makes sense to you and if you have any alternative suggestions.
Yeah, that's pretty darn close to the what I was kind of formulating as you were talking. Then you basically ended up pretty much where I was going to tell you to go. But that's just my opinion. What do you think, Matt?
Well, I was going to say, I do something similar where I have my, when I set up a client, I have a, usually get a Synology box. And then I have an external hard drive that's equal to the size of the storage array. And I usually do a RAID 5 or a RAID 6, depending on how they want to do that. And a RAID 5, you need to have three drives minimum. And I'm not sure if the 218 will do that or not. So
no, it's a two drives.
It's a two bay.
RAID 0 or 1. But
you're going to have to run
my feet wet.
You're going to have to run a mirrored RAID.
No? Yeah, so that gives you three options for RAID. That'd be a striped RAID, which is RAID 0, a mirrored RAID, which is RAID 1, or like a JOBD, just a bunch of disks, kind of a concurrent space. But given your storage needs are pretty modest, you can get a 4 terabyte drive for in the $100 mark for now.
Yeah, that's so, what I'm doing is 2 4-terabyte drives. Yep.
Yeah, so do two good 4 terabyte drives, and let them, and then put them in a RAID 1, so that they're mirrored. So if one of them fails, you just RMA the one that fails and send it back to the manufacturer if it's under warranty, or just simply replace it depending on how much time has elapsed.
Okay.
And then you can get a 4 or an 8 terabyte external hard, a 4, 6, or 8 terabyte external hard drive and program the NAS to make a copy that's not available on the network, to that drive. So if something happens to the NAS, you're at the point where, if you get your, ransomware or anything like that, you can just restore from the local backup. And then there's a whole slew of new cloud storage systems coming out. There's Backblaze B2, there's Wasabi, there's all kinds of stuff out there. And
yes, Synology, my head was swimming.
Yeah, I have a spreadsheet, and I think I'm somewhere in the 50 different cloud providers at this point in that list.
Yeah, well, and the problem is that once you start dealing with multiple vendors, then you get into multiple finger pointing as to whose fault it is. And you don't have high assurance that your solution is actually working, though I know one of the caveats of the backup is always test to make sure it actually works.
Right.
And that's why the potential C2 solution appeals to me down the road, because that's the continuing revenue model for them, which would mean it would seem like they would really bend over backwards to get the damn thing to work and make it simple.
Right. Yeah, because I'm busy rolling my own backup system for my Synology box, which is not as pretty as the built-in stuff. And that being said, Synology has been spending a lot of time recently. I did an update on my Synology box and went and looked in the new. There's a whole bunch of new backup tools and data, you know, moving data into a cloud-based system. Available
now. That I know of, PC Cloud, Hyper Backup, Snapshot, and then two different file systems. One is, which is not available in my model, but ext4 and brtf, which is supposedly a snapshot replication efficient file system. But I mean, you know, I shouldn't have to work this hard.
Well, <they're,
laughs> nice.
ButterFS is a definitely something to look forward to. It's a deduplicating, snapshotable file system, which makes things so much easier from a backup perspective.
So what do you typically recommend for a home user like me?
Well, a little Synology box is a great tool. EXT4 is tried and true at this point, although if you talk to the really hardcore people, they still say use EXT3. But I've been using EXT4 for almost 10 years and have had essentially zero problems with it.
Gotcha. And I have a buddy that's pretty high-tech, and he recommended disabling SMB1. And I said, what the hell is this? And so I looked it up, and I have no idea if I'm using it or not. Windows 10 boxes?
I think SMB1 is disabled by default now. It'll be SMB2 or it'll be... CISF or whatever it is, which is the kind of the Windows replacement for server message box or SMB. So the old ones, the authentication on it is not very good. It uses very, very weak authentication encryption. So that's why it's been, left to the annals of history.
Okay. And I believe I understand the theory of why the cloud backups work, but I just want a little verification, which is what I believe happens is the client on the PC is looking for changes to files, and it packages up just those changes, sends it to a cloud service, and then that service itself is responsible for applying that changes to its local copies. So if the ransomware did hit the system, all it'd be doing is sending up incremental encrypted changes, but on the cloud, you can still go back to a previous version that was unencrypted, unransomed.
That's okay. True, and another thing I was going to kind of throw into the mix that is like a really, as long as your Synology will run a DSM, a recent enough version of the DSM, then you can get a Dropbox app for it. Is another way to tackle the whole thing, because Dropbox does have up to 10 versions versioning on their system. So if the unthinkable should happen, you can go in and basically browse your versioning on your Dropbox.
Right,
as well.
Which works if you catch the ransomware soon enough, but 10 versions isn't very much if the ransomware is working real slowly and over 10 days it hits and all of a sudden you don't have anything current enough.
Well, but yeah, the versioning basically goes on the archive bit, I'm pretty sure. So as long as the archive bit, it doesn't, so the archive bit's going to get reset when the ransomware, encrypts the file.
Right.
And it'll get basically, it'll get copied then, but it's not going to qualify for versioning unless something else happens to the file that resets the archive bit to a 1.
Well, the odds of that would be pretty slim if it's encrypted, because you wouldn't be able to open the file.
Exactly.
Anything,
So you really don't have to, you don't have to worry about
it. Yeah, because it's not going to sit there and iteratively change the file 10 times. It's just going to... encrypt the file, and then it's going to move on to the next one. In most cases, I haven't heard of anything that advanced yet, where you know, writes a little different to the file, write a little different to the file. So it runs through your 10 versions and then, you know, jumps off.
The operative word there is get.
Yes, that's the internet for you. The other thing you should consider is if you're using a Windows machine, you should turn on shadow copy.
Shadow copy on the Windows.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll
which I think it is. I think it's on by default.
Yeah. So just make sure that shadow copy is turned on your machine. And what that does is it kind of does the same thing where it kind of does an iterative version of the files and keeps track of that in the file system. And if for some reason a file were to change or be deleted, you can go right click on the folder that it was in and say previous version and then go dig that out, you know, however long you've told it to keep it and stuff like that, which is really handy sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. I've seen whole machines get recovered using a volume shadow copy.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, And I thought that the NAS would be a relative Fort Knox until I read about 2 years ago there was this attack called the Sinolocker. So everything's a target.
Yeah, definitely.
Yep.
All right. Well, hey, thank you for a very geeky discourse here on a Monday. We appreciate
it. Yeah. Right. Well, thank you.
All right. Have a good one.
All right.
Take
bye.
Care. They don't call it geek speak for nothing.
That's something we deal with on a daily or weekly basis is solving those problems.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. But, you know, and it's good to hear somebody being so proactive, you know, about it because, you know, one of the things I was, you know, kind of one of the things I have a lot of clients do is just run their whole entire file, you know, stash off of their NAS, the Synology or, you know, whatever it is. You know, just basically keep as little as possible on their computers.
Mm-hmm.
And I've actually been playing around with a Cloud Sync app for Synology.
Yeah, Synology has a fairly robust, they just came out with Google Drive kind of app where you can set a folder and it synchronizes. And then there's like three or four other
what I'm using.
There's three or four other previous synchronization tools on there. Yeah. We have a few more minutes. You're on with the geeks.
I have a 2008 Mac laptop that says it is too old to update its iOS, and I have an iPhone 8 that says it's too new in order to communicate.
To talk to the computer.
My laptop.
Yep.
So I'm not able to upload photos, seeing if you have any roundabout ways for that.
Yeah, I'm afraid upgrading the computer is about your only path.
Well, can you connect the computer to iCloud Drive? Is it new enough to do that?
Yeah.
So I would see if you can transfer the files from the phone to iCloud Drive and then pull them off of iCloud Drive on the computer.
Oh, okay.
Or Google Photos, for instance.
Yeah, and the other as well. If you have a Google account, you can set up Google Photos on the phone, and then you can have a web interface to grab all the pictures off your Google account.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then as far as the iOS operating system, is there no way to update it with that old of a computer?
You can update iOS in a standalone situation now. You just have to be plugged into power and connected to Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
Because it won't allow me to.
Oh, really?
You're going to have to clear off some space on your phone then. It's probably too full to download the update and then run the update, so you'll have to clear off some space on that device.
Yeah.
Well, this is on the laptop.
Now, we're talking about if you try to do the phone standalone, you may be out of, like, not have enough free space to download the iOS updater on the phone. So, anyway, we've got a dash.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call.
Give us a call back next week.
Yeah.
Thank you. You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDNK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, with Roaring Fork Help Desk in studio with Louie the Computer Guy.
Hey, thanks a lot, Matt.
Absolutely. Enjoy this week.
Uh-huh.
Enjoy the snow, everyone. Be careful out there. We'll see you next week.